Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. I'm Preston Schlankhofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. We are coming to you from the Strategic Command Center of the Civil Defense Radio Bunker Complex. This week, we bring you more on an extremely popular subject since the Wuhan virus landed on our shores, preparedness. If you have not become more of a prepper yet, then you are definitely behind the power curve. Here's an interesting quote that fits this situation of failing to prepare for tough times ahead. Quote, "In a dangerous situation, we have chosen the most dangerous of courses. We have chosen not to face our danger." By Dr. Edward Teller, father of the hydrogen bomb. In our modern America, where everything is electronic and our just-in-time distribution systems make delivery of everything from food, gasoline, clothing, electricity, and entertainment almost instantaneous, we fail to see the vulnerability of society. State and federal governments have done a great job of selling the false narrative they will be there to help if some major crisis hits, like Hurricanes Katrina, Maria, Edna, Sandy, Harvey, you name it. There's many of them that they have shown that they have failed. Well, if we dig into the preparation and response of these disasters as just token examples of their effectiveness, we see that the responses come up noticeably short of their promise to take care of us. They should promote self-reliance instead of victimhood when it comes to emergency preparedness. There are other threats we should also consider. Many of these may be found on our website at civildefenseradio.com/threats. As well as the threats listed on our threats page, we also have some of the after effects of these crisis situations. Remember that there is a cause and effect for everything. The cause is the hurricane. The effects are the situation you have afterwards: lack of food, water, sanitation, etc. It is these effects you are really preparing for. Our tagline at Civil Defense Radio is, "Your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness." We chose this tagline for a reason, because it's true. Disasters are come-as-you-are events. How would you like to encounter a major disaster with only what you have in your home right now? If the answer is not really, then you need to do more work. According to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, their website, you are the help until help arrives. This means that you are your own first responder. FEMA is finally messaging that the government cannot help everyone, nor should they. It is our own responsibility to prepare for the event, survive the event, and help pick up the pieces afterwards. This is what our grandparents and great-grandparents did during their time. We can and should be doing it now also. This all means that we must stop and think about what it is we should do for ourselves. We should also consider all the threats we face at the family, neighborhood, and community levels. All this evaluation of our ability to survive the possible disasters means there must be a change of attitude and acknowledgement of these risks to our safety and security and survival during a disaster and afterwards. Currently, our nation is in upheaval with an uncertain political future, which is part of the reasons for the violence we see in many cities across America. Currently, our nation is in upheaval with an uncertain political future, which is part of the reasons for the violence we see in many cities across America. If you had heard the last three sit reps, episodes 66, 73, and 79, that we have done since July 2020, you would have heard about the neo-Marxist insurgency that is behind this violence and why it is a major threat to our nation and our freedoms. It is also a very real possibility that our freedoms may be at risk should they continue to go unchallenged and prevail in their power play to take over the levers of power at the federal and state levels. Then there is the threat of a second wave of the Wuhan. This may cause more life disruptions or at least continue some of the uncomfortable aspects for another season. Think about this. How would this affect you and yours? How about those living in your neighborhood and community? We should pray that the cure our president spoke of is real, that this new drug, Regeneron, will be what is needed to get our country back to life and living again without worrying about the Wuhan flu anymore. But what if it does not work as well as he's predicted? What if we continue to be hit with one disaster after another after another? To meet the challenges of this new decade of strife and turmoil, which is what I'm calling it, we will have to not only change our perception of the risk, but also our expectations from our local, state, and federal government's ability to assist us at all levels. We should evaluate how ineffective they may be in a major crisis and what it would take for you and yours to survive without government assistance for an extended period of weeks or months. Remember, the cavalry is not coming in time. There are six basics in the preparedness world. There are more, but these are considered primary for any preparedness one would build. The reason for these first six areas is because they are the most critical for survival of any crisis. They also fit within the Maslow's hierarchy of need. At the base of this hierarchy of Maslow's needs, he has psychological needs. The next one up is safety needs. And then the top three, they don't really apply unless you're in a thriving environment. But what we're going to be talking about are the basic two levels of Maslow's needs: food, water, shelter, security, communications, and health or medical. Let's take these in order one by one. Food. The rule of threes for survival states the human body can go without food for 3 weeks. However, that does not mean that you will be strong and mentally viable for those 3 weeks. What we must understand here is having enough food stored to get you and yours through the worst crisis you are preparing for. For many decades, FEMA and most state and local emergency management agencies, EMAs, only recommended 3 days of food supplies in your pantry. According to surveys, most homes already had that, so why did they recommend what we already had? Why didn't they offer some guidance on having more than what you normally have? Well, it goes back to training a nation of victims instead of a nation of people who respond and help out their fellow man. A growing number of states like California, Oregon, and Washington, and others are recommending 2 weeks of food supplies. Civil Defense Radio commends these states and all others that are joining this longer duration of food storage, although this may still not be enough. We recommend a minimum of 30 days of food for your entire family, including your pets. You must plan for this eventuality, and do not wait until the shelves are bare to react and go out and buy food. Buy extra items with every trip to the store, beginning today. 30 days of food storage in your home or apartment should be in a combination of regular foods that you normally eat, as well as some longer shelf-stable foods like white rice, beans, canned goods, etc. Understand that the frozen food and refrigerated foods may not last but a day or two if the power is out for a longer period of time. You will have no way of knowing when the power will come back on, so you may have to begin eating those items first about day two before they spoil. Once you have mastered the 30-day food storage, we recommend taking that out to 6 months or even 1 year of supplies. Sure, this is costly and takes a lot of storage space in your home, but it is worth the peace of mind you will have once you get there. This is where you could also include freeze-dried foods like Mountain House, My Patriot Supply, ReadyWise, and Emergency Essentials, just to name a few. Here is a short list of recommended supplies besides those listed above. Ready-to-eat canned meats, fruits, vegetables, and a hand-operated can opener. There's a lot of homes out there that only have electric can openers now. Well, you must have a hand-operated can opener in order to open these cans, unless they're pull types, which if they're pull types, then the shelf life is somewhat decreased than the regular canned products. Protein bars, fruit bars, dry cereal or granola, white rice, which stores longer than brown and wild rice, peanut butter, almond butter, sunflower butter. These butters have oil in them, essential oils that you need to help you survive and get through these challenging times. So also canned juices, non-perishable pasteurized milk, dehydrated milk, high energy foods, food for your infants, comfort stress foods like chocolate, gum, mints, etc. Pure virgin olive oil, vinegar, both white for cleaning and apple cider vinegar for use with foods. I'm going to cover a quick list of do's and don'ts. Do, keep food in covered containers. Do, keep cooking and eating utensils clean. Do, throw away any food that has come into contact with contaminated water. Do, throw away any food that has been at room temperature for more than 2 hours. Do, throw away any food that has an unusual odor or color or texture. Do, use ready-to-feed formula. If you must mix formula, use bottled water or boiled water as a last resort. Do not eat foods from cans that are swollen, dented, or corroded, even though the product may look safe to eat. Don't eat any food that looks or smells abnormal, even if the can looks normal. Do not let garbage accumulate inside, both for fire and sanitation reasons. I'm going to quickly mention cooking when not able to do so on your stovetop or oven. Have an alternative cooking method. Be sure to do this outside if possible. Never cook with an open flame inside or in a room that is not well vented. This can cause a terrible fire and destroy the shelter that your life depends on for survival. Along with fire, I would like to mention heating off-grid, in other words, no electricity. Again, do not use an open flame in your house unless it is in a real fireplace, not a gas fireplace. Gas fireplaces are not the same. They do not have a chimney, and the carbon monoxide remains in the home. This is a very unsafe environment. Also, do not use any open flame in a room that is not well ventilated. Another quick note on sanitation if the sewer system is down. This is a killer if not taken care of correctly. Disease can cause everyone to get ill, and it could also be deadly. Be incredibly careful with waste, especially feces. Handle it with care and do your research on how to deal with it properly. There are sanitation rules that need to be followed, and they should not be shortchanged. It could cost someone their life. Go to Home Depot and buy 2 orange buckets with lids and 6 boxes of 13-gallon trash can liners. Walmart has lids for these buckets that are actually seats designed for this use. Use 1 bucket for number 1, you know what that is, and 1 bucket for number 2. Add dirt and grass or whatever to the bucket after it's been used. It helps absorb some of the liquids and makes it a little more biodegradable. Do not wait to empty them until they are full. This creates an unsanitary mess. Empty them at the end of the day, but safely and properly. The garbage service may not be running, so keep garbage at a minimum and dispose of it in ways that it is burned, buried, or removed to safe places. Rodents and insects are not something you want scurrying around in your home when life is hazardous enough. Next category is water. Water, the rule of threes is only 3 days. Since our bodies are mostly made up of water, this is an important resource to ensure you have enough clean, drinkable water. Not all water is created equal, though. The last decade has seen bottled water become a common thing in most people's grocery carts. I've seen people stack up 3 and 4 cases at Costco, and this is how people buy water. A lot of people don't drink water out of the tap anymore. Is bottled water enough, though? No, because it takes up so much room to store enough water for an average family. It is also very heavy. Sure, you should have some on hand to last a few days, but you need something else. For some people, their water supply could be disrupted in a way that makes local water inaccessible or not healthy to drink. What do you do then? The answer to both questions above is having a quality water filter or water filtration system that will A, provide enough water to sustain your family during the crisis, and B, filter out all the harmful things in the water you are able to source or wherever you can get your water. Things like bacteria, pathogens, chemicals, and heavy metals may be in the water that you are getting at the local pond, lake, creek, or even a mud puddle. Another nifty rule in the preparedness industry goes like this. 3 is 2, 2 is 1, and 1 is none. The reason for this is in case one fails or is damaged, lost, or stolen, then you still have a backup. This means that if you only have 2 water filters, you really only have 1. So in practical terms, the minimum you should have of anything is 2. Use this rule for almost everything, even personal items you would use in an emergency, and you should be fine. Many brands of water filters advertise their ability to filter out extremely high amounts of harmful elements from your water. Some of these companies are Berkey Water Filters, Alexa Pure, LifeStraw, and Sawyer, to name just a few. It is a good idea to have both portable filters for on the go, as well as large style for home, where you can have a ready supply of large amounts of filtered water available. There are other methods for sterilizing water using chemicals like chlorine and iodine. Boiling water at a rolling boil for over 5 minutes is generally acceptable to kill whatever harmful elements may be in it, except some heavy metals may still be present. Water is important for life, and having a way to effectively filter it should be high on your list of essential survival items. Next item is shelter. When I was in the military, we would conduct exercises in the field. Whenever our company-level unit arrived at our bivouac site, we would establish security before we began the tedious task of setting up camp. I know, security is important, but this is coming up soon. Shelter is third on our list because the rule of threes says you can only last in extreme conditions for about 3 minutes. Therefore, shelter is important for our preparedness and survival plans, especially if disaster strikes during the worst part of winter. Not knowing what type of crisis may hit our home and neighborhood, we must be ready for a variety of threats. One of the effects of the crisis or disaster could mean that our home is either no longer safe to stay in or severely damaged. To mitigate this threat, we need to have the ability to temporarily establish alternate shelter. This could be a tent or some other pre-designated building or structure where you would relocate to if your home is not habitable. Part of the planning stage for those who live in areas threatened often by hurricanes is to have a safe place to go to coordinated before the crisis occurs. This could be a family member or friend's home who lives in a portion of the country within a 1 or 2 day drive where you have things stored just in case. Whatever it is, you must have something that gets you out of the direct threat from the elements and some protection while you regroup. Our next element is security. I told you security would be coming up. Sorry, there is no rule of threes for security, but it is listed here because in order to survive, you must be safe and secure while you are working to make the best of the crisis situation you find yourself in. It is also the second step in the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Many Americans have been indoctrinated into the false belief that guns are bad. This is false because those promoting this lie are the ones who say they can protect you. They are also the same people saying we should defund the police. You cannot have it both ways and survive. Relying on the police to protect you, as the anti-gunners promote, did not work out so well for those living in downtown Seattle. In July of 2020, a number of blocks in the Capitol Hill neighborhood were taken over by extremists who established the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, also known as CHAZ. The police substation that was there to provide safety and security for the neighborhood was under siege, and the police were ordered to abandon the substation to placate the extremists. Without the police and the substation, the residents who lived in the neighborhood and the businesses in the CHAZ were terrorized daily by the occupiers of the zone. The business owners were extorted, and at least two people, one juvenile, were shot and killed. I'm not saying that they should have taken up arms against these extremists, but having the means of self-defense is an important right for all Americans. If civility in America continues to decay, the ability to provide an armed resistance to criminals will be even more important. Since the violence began in the early 2020, the number of gun sales has risen to record-breaking levels. Over 5 million new gun owners joined the 100 million-plus existing gun owners in America. Many of these new gun owners previously believed guns were evil and the average citizen should not be allowed to possess these weapons. They are now singing a different tune. Why have so many people bought guns for the first time? They fear what is happening in our country and want to be prepared. They want to provide a higher measure of safety and security for their homes and families. Along with this giant surge in gun buying has been the related surge in purchases of ammunition for those weapons. This has caused a shortage of many calibers of ammunition and higher prices for what is now on hand and what may, let's hopefully, may later become available. When one purchases a firearm, they do not instantly become Rambo or Clint Eastwood. No, they need training, quality training on the proper care and handling of each of their weapons and time behind the trigger. This means expending their ammo supplies that are so difficult to obtain, plus the cost of receiving quality training to safely and effectively use their new weapons in a self-defense situation. You should also learn very quickly to never put your finger on the trigger unless you're ready to fire. Never. I've seen too many examples of people who should have known better put their finger on the trigger of their gun, and that is unsafe in any environment. As an example, I've received regular training with firearms since 1977 through today. You are never trained enough because the skills you learn are perishable and must be reinforced regularly. The activities of drawing a handgun, presenting it to the target, and firing is a process that must be practiced repeatedly throughout your life. The same for a long gun or shotgun. The simple exercise of reloading a weapon can be cumbersome to many. It takes a lot of practice to do this under stress, and especially when someone on the other side is shooting back. Practice, practice, and practice some more. The motions of proper manipulation of your firearm is something that must be practiced in order to master the techniques required of proper use, but then seek higher levels of mastery. Equipment is also particularly important. If you have a handgun, rifle, or shotgun, or all three, then you also need specialized equipment for each one. For a handgun, you need a holster for safe practice at the range. You should not carry your pistol without a quality holster. Do not purchase flimsy, cheap holsters or anything else for your weapons. It is less expensive to buy the right gear first. You also need spare magazines. I recommend 6 pistol magazines and 10 rifle magazines. Also, a magazine pouch to carry 2 spare backup magazines and a sturdy belt to hold it all up. You may need both an inside the waistband holster for concealed carry and an outside the waistband holster for other applications. And you need to practice with it all. Rifles and shotguns should always have a sling, period. This is their holster. You should not carry a rifle or shotgun without a sling. It's unsafe. If you have a rifle or defensive shotgun, how are you going to carry the extra ammo for them? You must have some sort of carry case or pouch for your reloads. Some people use either a chest rig or an empty plate carrier with magazine pouches. Many also have a belt rig, known commonly as a battle belt, which has magazine pouches on it for both pistol and rifle and or shotgun. This is an important point that needs some consideration. Never carry a gun without having reloads available. Even an AR-15 with a 30-round magazine needs reloaded should the need arise. Your pocket is not a place for your reloads or magazines. In a survival situation, there may be gangs and criminal opportunists looking to rob you of your stuff. They do not care if you live or die. They just want what you have, all of it. So, how much ammo should you have? Here is what I tell people who ask me this question. For pistols, I used to say 500 rounds, but now I say 1,000. You need 1,000 rounds of pistol ammo to know that you've got enough, and then buy more as you can afford it. Rifle ammo. Semi-automatic AR-15 style modern sporting rifles, or AKs. 2,000 rounds per rifle in whatever caliber it is. All right. Some rifles are built for 300 blackout. Some are built for 223, 5.56, 7.62 by 3.9, even 308 or 7.62 by 5.1. So whatever caliber that rifle is built for, or AR pistol, then that's the weapon that you need to make sure you have 2,000 rounds of ammunition for. Because in the long run, if we go into a long-term grid down situation, you will need more than that. But that's a minimum. These are minimums now. Pistol, 1,000. Rifle, 2,000 per weapon. Okay? Now, shotguns. I'm talking about an 18-inch barrel, 12-gauge or 20-gauge pump or semi-automatic. That's 1,000 rounds minimum, or 1,000 shells of double-op buck for self-defense and home protection, plus hunting ammo for small birds and game. Also, have an extra bird-length barrel for hunting. Having 200 one-ounce slug rounds for both defense and hunting is recommended also. And then last, hunting-style bolt-action rifles, I recommend a minimum of 200 rounds for that weapon to use for hunting and bringing in food to the home or the neighborhood. Along with owning a weapon is the mental ability to use it correctly. What I mean is the mental forethought of using this weapon you own on someone else. No, you cannot just shoot to wound. If you do, they will come back with more friends and take your life and your stuff. When I was a training officer for my Border Patrol sector in South Texas, I gave a very thoughtful briefing to all my new recruits who were onboarding before being sent off to the Border Patrol Academy in Georgia. My briefing touched on their mental ability to take a life and the reality that they would be working alone in the brush dozens of miles away from backup, that they would encounter large groups of illegal aliens by themselves and would have to effect an arrest on however many there were in front of them. My first class, I lost 3 recruits who quit that afternoon or the next morning. One young man even brought his parents in to help him resign. Well, you might ask, what about non-lethal? There are non-lethal options also available, but I am not going to cover these in this show, mainly because they are not effective in a real-life emergency. How could you be effective protecting your neighborhood from bands of MS-13 gang members with a baseball bat or pepper spray? Seriously. You could not and never will. This is why those 5 million new firearms owners have joined the ranks of the gun owner class in America. They understand the only effective deterrent to tyrants and thugs is an American with a firearm. Communications. This is the fourth one. You must be able to communicate with others before, during, and after a crisis. Radio communication may be the only option after the event. Cellular phone towers may be down, as well as many radio towers. Ham radio is the go-to communication tool for emergencies. If the ham system is down, wait 10 minutes, and the highly dedicated and capable ham guys will have their systems up and running very quickly. This is what they live for, besides talking to other ham operators. A ham radio is one of those regulated hobbies, unlike other channels you may find on radios you buy at a sporting goods store. Those are usually known as FRS, or family radio systems, and do not require a license. However, a ham license is only a few dollars and a few nights of study before you take a test. Once you successfully pass the test, you will receive your ham call sign and license within a short period. then you can officially talk on the ham frequencies and reach out internationally if you have the right equipment. Ham radios are also good for local communications because many of them have multi-band capabilities. This allows you to establish your local network on free channels that do not require licenses and reach out of your area for updates and other important information on the ham channels or even the weather channel. Start now with at least the FRS radios and expand to better, more powerful radio systems like the ham radio. It's worth your time to obtain it. Now we're going to cover medical, the last item on the list, but it's not the least of it. Health, medical. This is the last of the six main categories of preparedness. It is definitely not the least on the list. When someone is injured or sick, having a family member, neighbor, or friend who is trained in basic first aid, or better yet, as an EMT, is a great skill to have around. There are a lot of things in this category that I will barely touch on here. Suffice to say, this is a major specialty that requires extensive training at the advanced levels. First off, everyone should have basic first aid training and then stop the bleed training. These are necessary for normal everyday life and unexpected emergencies. If anyone in your family has the desire or inclination for medical training, then they should do it. A survey of your neighbors and their medical training would be good knowledge to have, just in case. This category also includes medicines that you or someone close to you may need. You should have at least a 3-month supply of any medication on hand for traveling and emergencies. Just speak with your doctor, as most will understand and do what they can, depending on the medication requested. Besides medication, you should also have bandages of various sizes, to include large patch-style bandages for larger wounds and sterile gauze. A tourniquet is another item that is useful in your medical kit bag. Know how and when to use this piece of life-saving equipment, especially if you own or will be around firearms as accidents happen. The dollar store is a great place to purchase antibiotic ointments and other creams and lotions that would be great to have in emergencies. A few bottles of hydrogen peroxide are great for flushing out wounds to keep them from becoming infected, which in some situations is deadly. Sometimes the smallest cuts can quickly become infected and may get worse without others noticing. It is a good practice to regularly monitor everyone in your home for cuts, scrapes, bites, and stings to ensure nothing goes undetected. Be prepared also for strained muscles, sprains, and broken bones. These need to be properly treated as soon as possible to not allow them to become worse. There are several splints, ACE bandages, and other items at discount stores that would be beneficial to have for these types of emergencies. Bengay and other treatments for sore, aching muscles would add some comfort after working to help disaster relief in your neighborhood and community after a disaster. For areas not covered here, I recommend you begin collecting a library of military and survival medical books, like the Special Forces Medic Handbook and others. These books are very detailed, and you will be well advised to have them handy just in case. And do not forget a book on dental injuries and field remedies to round out your collection. Have books on edible and medicinal plants and trees in your geographic area. Also, books on herbs and pure essential oils in your bag of resources would be recommended as well. As a last note, I wish to recommend that you meet with your neighbors and discuss these points. Hopefully, many of them have woken up to the reality of today's threats. Now is the time, possibly the last opportunity, to organize our neighborhoods into mutual assistance and security groups along the design model of the old Civil Defense Corps. This has been my mission since before 2017, when I began really promoting a renewal of that old idea. I wrote a guide to help get the discussion started. It can be found at the top of the resources page at civildefenseradio.com/resources. We are here to assist you in any way we can. Reach out to us via our website at civildefenseradio.com. Please like, share, and comment on our shows and on our social media sites. This really helps us with the almighty algorithms that bring in new listeners. We cannot reach new people without your help. So please, like, share, and comment, and tell everybody you know about our program. We're doing this for you. This is our way to share the information that we come across on a regular basis And this is so important that you hear it and people that you know hear it. You know, we're not trying to get rich or anything. We're not even asking for donations right now. So please just share this information. It's important. Share it with those that you love and those that you like, and even the ones that you don't like. Maybe eventually you may come to an agreement and you found out that you don't hate them after all. Anyway, with that said, civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com/resources. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, on Twitter at civil_def_radio, and our YouTube channel at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. I wish to thank you, our friends, who are listening to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us. I really appreciate your comments. I really appreciate you sharing and liking our platforms. This means a lot to us. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time. Goodbye.